And the difference between a quick scan and a deep scan, we should probably mention.
One is quick and one is deep.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax, HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims from HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin Compliance. How's it going, Donna?
It's going quite well. I feel good. I'm operating within acceptable parameters, as data would say.
Yes, I am completing my first pot of coffee, so I am there with you.
Pot.
We don't do cups around here. We do pots.
I thought you got a Keurig you were so proud of.
I know, I do. I am proud of it. I'm very proud of my Keurig, and because I practically stole it.
Well,
it's the beauty of auctions in the South. Somebody's Keurig would not work, and so I picked it up for $10. Mm-hmm. It was a $279 version, and it just needed a good cleaning. So I had to take it a little bit apart a little bit and clean it out real good, and works great. Works perfect.
Yeah, but you took it apart. So
yeah,
just
yeah.
People note that
I did.
David will dismantle anything to see what will happen. So
you know, that little thing on there says, do not remove this tag or do not remove this plate or whatever.
Yeah.
let's take that off. So
take
off. Yeah, it just that's all it needed. Just a little TLC.
There you go.
And it was good. So yeah, now I've joined the rest of the world in the K-Cup extravaganza.
Yeah, except at where you are now, you just drink right out of a pot.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally pick up the pot and drink out of it, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I thought. All right, so
today we're going to answer a couple questions. We're not going to really call it a Q&A episode because we're going to spend most of the time on one particular topic. But we did have a question come in, and we'll jump on that one first thing. But we had a question come in from Billy Joe from Florida, or as some people call it, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy Joe wrote, I listen to your podcast every week. I love that you're able to make HIPAA entertaining.
Yay!
Yes, that's my job. We have our patients wear name tags, and when we call them, we use first name and last name. The reason for this is because we're in such a large practice that it's very common to have more than one patient with the same name. We recently had a patient complain about this, stating that it was a HIPAA violation. Of course, we did not require her to wear the name tag. What are your thoughts on these topics? P.S. We love David. He's awesome.
No, it said thank you again for all the education you provide. No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong version. My bad.
Yeah, the one that you always you start updating them, sending them to me.
Yeah. So she's got a lot going on here. It's kind of interesting that she has so many people with the same name. I could see how that would be confusing. Can you imagine being in the room and call out somebody's name and having two or three people stand up and then trying to figure out who's who? Because you don't want to go, this is David Sims with the XYZ problem. You know, come to the front. You don't want to do that. So what do you think? What's a good thing for them to try to do to accommodate the patients that are coming in, and also, you know, focus on privacy?
Well, there actually is specific guidance on that from HHS. And so I went ahead and sent that link over to Billy Joe this week when our question came in. So we do actually answer you, just note to self. But the guidance says that you can call out a patient's name in the waiting room, because then it's considered an incidental disclosure to just hear a name or to see it on a sign-in sheet, because everybody panicked about sign-in sheets there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
When the privacy rule just came out. But you can't say used to on the sign-in sheets before the privacy rule, which there's some people that don't remember back then, but they would actually say, why are you here? You know, what's the problem and stuff? Well, something's itching. you know, you can't put anything other than the name, and the check-in time, really.
I'd always write on there because I have an appointment. That's why I'm here.
My appointment. Reason for visit. So you can't do any of those things, but you can put the name and the time and those kind of things. There's some discussion on whether you can even include the doctor, but that's a questionable thing. If you're at a practice that's orthopedic and all of the doctors are orthopedics, it's not saying a lot which doctor you're seeing. But if you're in a multi-specialty clinic, it does. So just saying. Anyhow, but in her case, what I was recommending, though, is wearing a name tag in the waiting room is probably going beyond that guidance, because now it's not incidental. You didn't just hear the name. You had to be sitting in the waiting room paying attention to the name they're saying to incidentally hear somebody's name. In her case, I would just be sitting there looking at somebody's name on a name tag. I could sit there and take down everybody's name if I wanted to. So now it's not really incidental. So I understand the scenario and what you're trying to fix. Let's just find another way to fix it, because I don't want to say, no, you're stuck with your problem. Go back to your problem. I want to find a solution to the problem. So I suggested, could they consider doing the patient's initials or a medical record number? Although I did realize after I said this, you can use lanyards with pre-numbered tags on them. Mm-hmm. And then you can just say, number 42. But I realized at that point, you may start to feel like you're at a butcher shop, and it may be counterintuitive too. So at that point, then I had visions of the guy with the cold cut commercial that I love, the touchdown dance with the cold cuts, got some cold cuts. So that kind of took away from my suggestion, but I would definitely find another way to solve the problem, because yes, you need to solve the problem, but at the same time, the way you're currently solving it is probably not something. Again, we don't offer legal advice, but I would say if it were my situation, I would recommend changing it. But certainly everybody has to run their business, and so it's your call. So there you go, Billy Joe. Thank you for taking the time to actually send us a question. And we've had people that I've talked to, and they're like, oh, I'm trying to get up the nerve to send a question.
Just email it.
Yeah, email it. You don't have to do the speak pipe. We won't play your voice, but we do appreciate it that it also helps us know some of the topics, which we've talked before about questions come in, and it gives us a topic for a podcast. And just like with Billy Joe, we will offer to come to Florida and help you, because any excuse to come to Florida is a good one as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, especially our listeners in Hawaii.
Hey, we got a guy in Hawaii. We got a guy. We keep telling him, man, you got to get it going so you can invite us out there. But thank you very, very much for taking the time. And I hope the answer is helpful to you. At least the guidance from HHS, which we will include on the website for this podcast. It does kind of make it clear. For everything except for the scenario you're talking about. So go with that guidance, use it for your discussion with your team, and figure out where you want to go with it. So there you have it, then leads us to the next question that came in, which becomes the whole topic of the rest of the discussion.
The rest of the story.
The rest.
So the second one came in is about malware, and the specific question was, this came from Susie from Savannah. So not too far for you to travel there.
I like Savannah too.
I do too. We were in a conference in Savannah together, what, about 3 years ago?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it was that long, but it's probably that long.
3-4 years? I don't know. Yeah. But I had a blast. I really loved the area we were in.
Yeah.
So wet willies, great. Love it.
You just had to go there. There you go.
So it reads, I would like to have a podcast or a quick answer to, I love the fact that they understood that sometimes we can't give a quick answer. Yeah. The difference between antivirus software releases and antivirus definitions being up to date. I understand the antivirus definitions up to date, but a little fuzzy on the antivirus software releases. And please give examples.
Yes. And the second problem.
Yeah. And so on the heels of this question, we also ran into a news article that came out, which I don't think it happened in the United States, but correct me if I'm wrong. But there was a medical procedure going on, and the malware scan kicked in on the computer equipment they were using, which halted the medical procedure from being done. Death by antivirus. No, yeah. He didn't die. He or she, whatever, didn't die. Nothing came of it, but it's kind of scary to think that somebody misconfigured their malware scanning such that it caused a medical procedure to have to stop and wait on them to reboot the equipment before they could continue.
Yeah, and you don't want that to happen when it's a life or death situation. So I do like the article made the point of saying that at the beginning it says RTFM. No, really, read it.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, the acronym stands for read the freaking manual.
That's it. That's what it does mean. We get the clean rating. So,
you were nervous for a second, I know.
Yeah, I didn't know where you're going to go with that. But actually, I'm not quite sure. I believe, because this is referencing an FDA event report. So this is a U.S. based issue.
Okay.
So we'll have a link to it. You can check it out yourself. But the bigger issue had to do with malware scans and antivirus scans. So here we go. I thought we would start with what is malware, and then what does HIPAA say about doing these protections? What does OCR say about it? And then our recommendations. What do you think, David?
Yeah, our recommendations. Absolutely. Yeah,
we may not be able to control ourselves throughout as we talk about things, but maybe we'll get through it.
Yeah, so, I will bring my skill set. That's for sure. So anyway, malware. The confusion I think about malware is that somewhere along the line, it just kind of popped out of nowhere, this word. Mm-hmm. Because, several years ago, we all knew it as viruses. And so you talked about viruses or antivirus, and that was kind of all you really heard or needed to know. And then eventually other things came along and you started hearing things like spyware, or you heard Trojan horses, which is funny. I'll stay away from that. Keyloggers, rootkits, backdoors. I mean, there's a number of different things. And so what somebody decided was that we would group all these things together into one category called malicious software. So malicious software is
slammed together where
malware comes from. So because
according to Wikipedia, this term was created in like 1990, but it didn't catch on until a virus we all understood was a certain way, and then all this other stuff wasn't really a virus, so you had to have another name for it, and they pulled that one out. Dusted it off, apparently.
Yeah, because not to get into technical aspects of it, but yeah, a virus is a bit different than spyware. Some of the other. Yeah, they do different things. They're not destructive. Back in the day, we had viruses that were like, the Chernobyl virus, which literally would melt down it would render your computer unusable, mm-hmm. period.
It would attack the computer itself, and now there's so much value in the computer staying operational, you don't really get a lot of that.
No, because I remember when that came out, it would rewrite the firmware of your BIOS. It was, your computer was trash. You couldn't do anything with it but throw it in the trash at that
useless.
Point. good days.
Good times. There you go. So malware is really bad stuff, but it's software that runs on your computer in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's really scary about it is just like with the viruses, they learned how to stop the viruses. And then somebody said, hey, but wait a minute, we can use these computers for botnets and all this kind of stuff. So let's don't kill them. Let's take them over, but don't let anybody know we're taking them over and get control and steal stuff.
Yeah. But with the advent of the internet and how people have a lot more things that they're doing on computers than they were back in the mid-90s, there wasn't very much going on, really.
Yeah, I know. Everybody laughed when they heard about a computer virus. Computer sick. I remember those days. But, you know, those are long gone. And these things are scary. They are stealthy and evasive. So everybody's like, why can't they stop this? Why do people do this? Look, it is not easy to stop these things. You know, everybody thinks it's just like, you know, push a button and, you know, you've got to sit there and write code trying to figure out every single way they could try to get in and using you. And you are generally the biggest problem.
And then there's, you know, there's variants of it. So it's, I mean, think of it just like a regular virus. I mean, if you get the flu or a cold and then there's a different strain that comes out, it does the same thing. Computer viruses the same way in that it can be written one way. And then as soon as they come out with a fix for that or inoculation, then they'll come out with a different strain of that same virus. And it can take, sometimes it can take, you know, rewriting a fix for that.
Because they'll find another way in. And it's, you know, when somebody, people say, why do people do this? Okay, imagine this. You're in a country where there is a room full of hackers that are being paid to sit there and figure out how to break in. Now, after they come up with the code to break in, they just move on to another, trying to find another way to break in, or how can I distribute this and all of that. It's a job for some people. It's not, you know, they're bored like it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what question I used to get all the time. Do they not have, you know, full-time jobs? Are they just sitting there all day long? I'm like, dude, that is their job, and they get paid a lot of money to do that.
Yeah, millions of dollars, you know, people make, sometimes billions. So it's definitely a lucrative business, especially when you look at a lot of it happening outside the U.S. Now, that's not to say it doesn't happen in the U.S., but a lot of it happens outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, this one I still can't pronounce, and I've seen it several times. Stego malware.
Okay.
It's malware that targets smartphones.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're coming after all the other devices now. So as we move from being PC focused, that's, a laptop, a desktop, that's the way we were consuming things on the internet, which is how they get these things to us now, then that doing it that way has now changed to its mobile devices is the number one way, really, in a lot of cases, to access most websites and consume content. So that's where we have to move all of our protections as well. And you can't forget about the ones you have because you're still using the laptop and desktop some,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to protect the other devices. So
yeah.
It's nasty. It's nasty stuff. I was working around IT folks recently, and I hear these two guys. And, it took everything I had not to go. I was busy doing something else, but it took everything I had not to go over there and go, what's it doing? Because it was like, this thing is adapting. I can't find a way to kill it. Every time I think I've killed it, this thing adapts and shows up again. It's protecting itself. And I was like,
Let me see.
Let me see. I want to know. You know, because it's bad, but at the same time, it's very interesting. At least mm-hmm. people like us.
Well, it's like, surgeons, I'm sure, they have these cases that come in that are unusual, and they're like, ooh, let me see.
Well, my hand surgeon is very proud of himself. I just went to see him this week, about how much I've gotten used to my hand back. And he kind of sits tall, and you can see him feeling pretty good. And I go, I'm proud of you, too. Because he said, not just anybody gets to do this kind of stuff. It's awesome. Not that I want to be that patient, but I am. So, yeah, it's cool. So, what does HIPAA say about all this stuff?
Protect yourself.
What about yourself? You ever seen that one? The YouTube viral thing with the little girl, Emma? Worry about yourself.
No, I hadn't seen that one.
I'm going to have to find it and put it put a link on the page. It's hysterical. It's little bitty girl trying to buckle her own little rocket seat. You know, she's trying to buckle herself into her car seat. Can't get in. Everybody's waiting on her. And she keeps saying, they're like, can we help you? Worry about yourself. she's probably like 16 now and hating that. But anyway, it does say in specifically, and interestingly enough, in the administrative safeguards.
Not so, technical.
Yeah. 164.308.5IIB.
Wow.
Yes. Under the implementation specifications, you must implement protection from malicious software, procedures for guarding against detecting and reporting malicious software. And it does say it's addressable, which, in case you're one of those people, addressable doesn't mean I don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Addressable means it doesn't give you specifics on how to do it because there's so many different ways to do it, and that you need to determine what's the reasonable and appropriate manner for doing it in your environment.
Mm-hmm. I like
so, it. Guarding against detecting and reporting, note to self.
So detection wouldn't be, I got this thing that popped up on my screen that says, call the FBI. I just detected a virus.
Yeah, it's not personal protection, no.
Yeah, so hint, here you go. Here's some free IT advice. Don't call any phone number that pops up on your screen.
No, don't.
Microsoft is not going to call you.
No. They're not going to tell you to call them. And, you know, if it says you need to load an update, then call your IT people to ask them before you load it if it's popping up from a web page.
Yeah. And there's nobody in Zimbabwe that wants to get $15 million to you to put in your account.
Yeah. Those are bad ones. But... So that's what HIPAA says we're supposed to do. And by that, it means that you should be running antivirus software, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, because that would do guard against and detect and then reporting on. So you better be aware of what this stuff is doing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're not looking, then you don't know what's happening.
If you're looking, it ain't cooking. That's my new thing. Don't be cooking up breaches.
So another thing about antivirus that a lot of people don't realize is that it's beyond putting antivirus software just on your desktops or your workstations or even your server. Now you can do antivirus on multiple layers of your network. So you can have antivirus sitting on your what's called a UTM, your Unified Threat Management device, which is like a router that has antivirus built into it. There are certain cloud services that your internet service can pass through and it can scan for viruses. Then you got email scanning of viruses. Sometimes that can happen on your computer. It can happen in a cloud service or another third-party service. So there's a lot of different areas that you can have virus protection to take place and not just on your computer. And you should do that. You should have multiple layers of protection.
Yes. It's a layered approach.
Yep.
Just like anything else.
Yeah. I like to tell people because, you know, we always have to draw kind of similarities from the natural world. And so it's the same as, you know, protecting your home. You don't just lock the front door and leave and not look at it again for a year, which is what people do a lot of times with antivirus because they'll put it on. It has a 1-year subscription and they don't pay attention to it again for a year. They don't make sure it's being updated or anything. You know, in a home, if you want to properly protect your home and you're in a bad neighborhood because the internet's a bad neighborhood,
Yeah, it is.
But you won't, you know, I know you've seen TV shows or maybe even been to somebody's house where they have like all types of locks and chains and all these things up and down the door, you know, where they live in a bad neighborhood. But they've got all these multiple devices on their door to keep the door locked. But then they'll have an alarm system or maybe they'll have a dog, or maybe they'll have, you know, a sign in the yard that says they have an alarm system. But they got all these things that are layers of protection to try to keep people out. Not mm-hmm. saying it will keep people out. Don't let anybody tell you that any antivirus is 100%. It's not. It doesn't exist. It takes a layered approach, and it takes people paying attention. And more importantly than probably anything else is it takes people that are using the computers to have some computer common sense and not to let things in on their own.
Well, and, you know, a lot of it is not just necessarily common sense. It's security awareness training so that they understand, you know, these things that when you see this, you shouldn't do this. Or when this pops up, don't do anything with it. Or make sure that if you see these errors, you tell somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, that goes back to what we've talked about over and over. It's the people that need the security awareness training. And some people just don't understand it.
We need workforce training.
You know, you don't just train on HIPAA. You train on protecting. You know, that's two different things. Train on understanding why we're doing this, which is HIPAA. But then the rest of it should be understand, you know, what you're supposed to do. Not just why, mm-hmm. but what. And a lot of times that gets lost in the message. So to kind of make it clear how OCR feels about this, on how important they think it is, I pulled two resolutions that, you know, we always a big believer that if you look at the OCR resolutions, they give you the guidance that everybody says they don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got one that is the Anchorage Community Mental Health. This one goes they are paid $150,000 and went into a corrective action plan. So it's a 5-facility nonprofit organization doing behavioral health to children, adults, and families in Anchorage, Alaska. So, you know, they had to report a breach, 2,743 people, due to malware compromising the security of its information technology resources. How about that? Malware.
Yeah.
So
that's not even a breach. It's just that they had malware that could have been a breach.
No, malware caused the breach.
Caused the breach. Okay. Yeah. I gotcha.
So the security incident was a direct result of them failing to identify and address basic risks, such as not regularly updating their IT resources with available patches and running outdated, unsupported software.
Can you say Windows XP?
No, really?
If you're on XP, get off of Windows XP.
Yeah, Windows XP, this right here, but there's a bigger one I'm going to show you in just a second. So this is from December 2014. And so that was the first time it came up, and malware gets in there because they're not watching for it. And, you know, it was unpatched vulnerabilities that caused the problem and left patient information susceptible to malware.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it was probably like a keylogger or something.
Right.
I haven't read the details on it in a long time, so I'm not going to profess that I know. But then the next one is from this past December, University of Washington Medicine. They settled for $750,000 and a corrective action plan because they failed to implement policies and procedures to prevent, detect, contain, I seem to have that problem again, and correct security violations. Approximately 90,000 individuals accessed after an employee downloaded an email attachment containing, now this one says malicious malware, which is in the dictionary under redundant, see redundant. So the malware compromised the organization's IT system, affecting the data of two different groups of patients. So they had 70,000 involved in 76,000. Okay. And 15. I'm glad you're paying attention to the notes I gave
you. How about that?
And then 15 in the other one. So they had a whole bunch of stuff, and they didn't have the proper protections in place to at least try to mitigate these risks. And malware did it to them again. So $750,000 plus $150,000. And I'm going to wager that the further out it goes, the higher these fines will be for just not doing these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's getting to the point that any business needs to be doing this, not just HIPAA businesses. But so that's what they say. So now that we've covered what is malware and what does HIPAA say about it and what does OCR seem to think about what you need to do about malware, then let's go back and answer Susie's question about the difference between antivirus software release and definitions and understanding what all that means and what our recommendations are for true HIPAA compliant antivirus malware management.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, I know, really. And you notice in my notes, I just stopped here because I don't know what we think.
Yeah, there's nothing. It just says, what do we think?
Yeah, what do we think? Because we make that up as we go. Yeah. What are you going to talk about? I'll know when I open my mouth. But
sometimes I don't know when I open my mouth.
I know, really. So let's explain the antivirus software and definitions, the differences between the two, if we can, because people get very confused about that.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about what we think should be done to maintain your HIPAA compliance and meet this obligation. How about that, David?
Sure. Let's do it.
So when it comes to antivirus software and antivirus definitions, you know, think of it as there's the software that you run your accounting with, and it has to be updated and maintained. So, you know, I talk about QuickBooks just because we use it, but, you know, we use, like a lot of people, you use what your accountant tells you to use. So, you know, it has to maintain, the software you use has to have updates to it and be up to date, right?
Right.
And then you actually have to maintain the data that goes into the software. So all the data that tells the software what to do, all the settings and tables and all that kind of stuff, somebody's having to maintain that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Fair enough. So the same thing has to happen with antivirus software. You have the software that's actually doing the processing and trying to find the things, and then you have the data, the tables, the settings that tell it what to look for and where to look for them. So those are the two pieces. Does that make sense to you, David?
I'm following you.
Oh, thank God. If I can get it through to you, maybe I can get it through to other people. But there's the difference between the two, and you can have, so we have people who say, well, my antivirus is up to date, and you go look at it, and it's got the definitions are up to date, so the tables have been maintained to match the version that they're on, but the version they're on is five releases behind because they didn't maintain support on the software.
Mm-hmm.
So even though your tables are up to date, the software itself isn't being changed to handle some of these new problems, and right, therefore, there's only so much the software can do, because it doesn't have those updates and new features. Even though your table's up to date, the software can only do so much with it.
Right. Antivirus is such an important part, and there are things changing so rapidly with the number of viruses that come out on a daily basis that I know in our IT organization, we do updates to, or at least we look for updates every 4 hours. That's how often we do it. So, and there's typically a couple of updates a day that come out to the definitions. Mm-hmm. And so it's a constant thing that we have to keep up with, making sure that We're looking for updates. We're applying updates. We're patching software. You know, you mentioned doing software patching. You know, you can have the best antivirus in the world, but if you're not patching your third-party software, you're not patching your Windows software, that's one of the biggest ways that things get breached and viruses get in is just through vulnerabilities that are already fixed, but because the fixes haven't been applied to your systems, they're easily manipulated.
Right. And that goes to the other piece of protecting against malicious software is security updates and checking for not just, oh, I load all my Windows updates. Mm-hmm. Not going to fix you because it's the Adobe or the Microsoft Word or somewhere you end up picking up something and Windows is not the tool that they use to get in.
Yep. It's a lot of stuff that you have to keep up with. And that, you know, that's honestly, that's why it's good to have a trusted HIPAA compliant IT vendor is to offload some of that stuff. Because I can tell you, if you're going to try to do the stuff yourself, it's probably not going to get done.
No.
It's
just, and everybody, I mean, if that's not your job, you forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not easy to keep up with and doing it manually is very complicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, we still have people that they go around once a quarter and check every computer to see if the software and the data tables are up to date on their antivirus. Well, what about everything else?
Yep.
So what we recommend, what we say about all of that, and, oh, well, here's another thing I want to see what you think about. And again, here we are learning it as we talk about it. But what are your thoughts on the quick scan versus the deep scans? And, you know, people want to turn their computers off at night, so we want to run the scan. Because remember what we just mentioned at the beginning was the scan that ran that shut down the machine for the procedure that was being done. So what is it that we should be doing for that?
Well, I'm a proponent of leaving the computers on, and that's primarily because everything that I do to a client's computer that is going to take resources and possibly interfere with the use of their machine, I want to do it after hours. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it during the day or while they're doing operation. So I set things up to happen after hours. Now, there's an argument that, well, if I turn the computers off, then people can't have, you know, 12 hours to try to get into my systems because they're turned off. And I don't disagree with that. It's a valid argument. However, you can't have virus scans and backups and all that stuff running during the day while you're trying to use your computers or your internet, because a backup is going to suck up all your bandwidth and you're not going to be able to get on the internet because it's taking everything. I mean, I know you can throttle things back and all that, but sometimes if you got a lot of data going up, it's just hard to make that happen. Anyway.
Well, and you got people, you know, they don't have high-end machines on these desks.
Yeah.
You know, so the machine can barely do what the employee's trying to do with it.
Yeah, I know. As long as you can get on Facebook, you're good. But yeah, I like leaving them on. I like to have everything maintenance wise to happen after hours. As far as the quick scan and the deep scan, I typically like trying to run a quick scan in the morning. And that way, if it picks up something, let's say if I run a quick scan at 6 a.m., typically nobody's going to get in the office till 7 or 8. I can know that there's an issue before the client gets in, hopefully, and have it resolved. In most cases, our automated systems will find things and address it and then just let us know it fixed it. So I can make sure nothing happened. And then in the evening, I'll kick off a deep scan because it can sometimes take hours to do a deep scan.
How often do you do?
It depends on, I try to work with the client to find out, you know, do they have a policy around it? If they don't, then I will do a minimum of once a week. Sometimes I'll do them 3 or 4 times a week, but minimum I'll do it once a week.
Yeah, I find that there's a hard, it's kind of hard to do those deep scans often during the week because they do take so many hours on these machines that are not, you know, they got a big hard drive, but the memory and the CPU are maxed out already.
Yeah, so that's why we kick those things off usually, you know, Friday evening so that they have the entire weekend to run, which they don't typically take that long, but there again, it's one of those, you know, case-by-case basis, depending on the client, depends on what they've got, depends on the systems. I mean, there's just a lot of factors that go into it. And of course, if they come up and say, our policy is that we're not going to do a deep scan once a month, and I can't convince them otherwise, and I'm going to do whatever the policy says, because they've got to be able to answer for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the difference between a quick scan and a deep scan, we should probably mention.
One is quick and one is deep. The quick scan usually will just scan the more well-known, I guess you can say, areas of your system. So it looks in your Windows directories and some of the directories where viruses are most likely to be at. Whereas a deep scan will scan everything, or as we say down here, everything.
Everything. So the quick scan hits all of the high points and, you know, looks in the memory and all of that. So it just kind of looks around the house, goes into the room. It's security that looks around the house. They go into the room. They look around the house. Do they see anything in the room? No. Do they go and open all the closet doors and look underneath? You know, so when you're watching the scary movie and you're like, don't open that door. The deep scan opens that door. The quick scan does not.
It looks under the bed.
That's right.
Opens up the dresser. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I like it.
Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
One goes in your drawers and the other one don't.
One goes through your drawers. So there's the big difference between the two. And when we talk about what we have other episodes where we've talked about what IT companies should be doing for their clients that are needing to do their HIPAA documentation and stuff. And often we'll come in and we'll say, well, you know, how do you know they're doing this? I mean, are they giving you a report to show you at least monthly, you know, or I guess at least quarterly, preferably monthly, that's a summary report that just says, hey, all of your devices, we've checked them out. They're all good. You've got some things that went into quarantine. We checked them out. We cleaned them up. Everything's on the latest security patches, or these three computers need to be rebooted to finish installing stuff, so on and so forth. You know, I need a summary to show me how many things look good, how many things have problems.
Mm-hmm. I just done some this morning.
Yeah. So it can be done. And, you know, a lot of these folks use, we've talked repeatedly about RMMs. So a lot of these folks use these tools that will do this for you.
Yeah. Because if it's automated, it's more likely to get done. It's funny because I recall years ago, before there was much to do about RMM, you'd walk into a client and you'd start talking to them about backing up their stuff. And this was, you know, pre-automated backup as far as sending it to a cloud or offsite. But you talk to somebody and they would say, yes, I do the backups. And so I would say, okay, so you don't have an interest in our service where we can come in and do the backups for you or automate that process. No, I do the backups. Okay, great. When's the last time you done a backup? Well, I haven't had time in the past couple of weeks. And, you know, when's the last time you tested your backup? And then that's when they really look at you and go,
that's the blinking look, right? Just blinks.
We have to test our backups.
And I just do what it says.
Yeah. And I can tell you several horror stories about people going to use their backup and then realizing that it doesn't work when they need it. Or even I had a client one time says, I don't need cloud backup from you because I have then something night a service. And I was like, okay, that's cool. At least you got something. Let's check it to see what it's doing. And then I found out that it hasn't backed up in a year because there again, you have the service, but nobody's watching and nobody's looking at it. So,
which is the important thing about these reports is, yes, you can get them automated, but don't just run the report and nobody look at it because that's the other problem. Yeah.
Many times there are systems that are telling you there's a problem, but if nobody's looking at it, you just don't know there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. So I think that covers a ton of stuff, and we've run long, but we got a bunch of stuff done. Answered two questions.
Awesome.
Three and addressed, we answered two questions and addressed a news item that was somewhat scary.
Very good. Well, that's our show for today, and we'd like to thank everybody for listening. Don't forget to review us on iTunes. Thanks for all the people who have been reviewing us. We got some new ones in lately, so thank you guys for taking the time to do that, because we see that as kind of like our payment for doing a great job. So
when, that's it.
When
that's
you
it.
Review us on iTunes, then you're saying, you know, thanks, Donna, thanks, David, for putting in the hard work and doing this for us. So we appreciate that.
I know, and you can also post that stuff on our Help Me With HIPAA LinkedIn company page or our Facebook page.
Yeah.
So if you're not an iTunes user and it's a hassle to do it on iTunes, feel free to do it on LinkedIn or our Facebook company pages.
Or email it or do smoke signals. It doesn't matter. Just do, just tell us how good we are.
No, but David needs it. He really
needs
it.
I need assurance all the time. Just, I just have a bad view of myself. So don't forget to share us out on social media. Get the word out there. People who are finding us are very thrilled and glad they have. So I hope that you are one of the ones that are helping people find us. Don't forget you can visit us on the web at helpmewithhipaa.com. And also don't forget we have courses out there. So if you're a business associate or a covered entity, we do have some courses there on our website that are beneficial for you. Stay tuned. We have some other stuff coming out. We're not ready to release it yet, but it's coming. So it's coming.
Get up off me.
I'm not going to say who dropped the ball yet, but it's coming. Stay tuned. It's going to be some great stuff. So remember, you can send us a question and we will feature your question possibly on a future podcast if it's not crazy. But remember, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.